This is Jim Engster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from NPR commentator and writer Eric Deggans. His book is Race Baiter, revealing, in his words, how the media wields a dangerous way of dividing a nation through its words, even as the election of the first black president forces us all to reevaluate how we think about race, gender, culture, and class lines. Some areas of modern media are working hard to push the same old buttons, says Eric Deggans. We'll talk with him. Also, we are scheduled to hear from Jack German, the fabled columnist who's a graduate of Baton Rouge High, and his thoughts about election 2012. We're 8 days now past November 6th, and President Obama has won re-election by more than 3 million votes. All this, first the news on WRKL. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email at engstershow@wrkf.org. We are slated this hour to hear from Jack German, the fabled columnist who graduated from Baton Rouge High, class of 1945. He's been covering presidential elections since John Kennedy defeated Richard Nixon in 1960. And we'll hear from Jack German about his analysis of the election of 2012. And if all goes according to plan, we'll hear from commentator Eric Deggans, who is featured frequently on NPR. And he has a new book, Race Baiter, revealing, in his view, how the media wields dangerous words to divide a nation. Some items of interest. Governor Jindal, in an interview published yesterday by Politico, says we've got to make sure that we're not the party of big business, big banks, big Wall Street bailouts, big corporate loopholes, big anything. That's the governor's view of the Republican Party, and his message to voters in an interview with Politico. We cannot be, we must not be, the party that simply protects the rich so that they get to keep their toys, Jindal said. And this is an indication that the governor may be ramping up to run for president in 2016. He adds, this means 47% and 53%. Any combination is going to be 100%. I presume he was stating that Governor Romney, in his remarks that were taped earlier on the campaign trail, may have forsaken 47% of the electorate. So It will be interesting to see how Bobby Jindal ramps up and makes his case that he should be the Republican nominee in 2016, but it sure looks like the governor of Louisiana is endeavoring to make a run for the presidency. And as we know, he spent quality time in Iowa over the last several years, and in particular during his quest to help Mitt Romney unsuccessfully become the president of the United States. Romney, by the way, did not carry the state of Iowa, although he did carry Louisiana handsomely by about 344,000 votes. And in Louisiana, we have a divide somewhat like the rest of the nation. The urban centers are voting for Democrats. In New Orleans, President Obama won by about 100,000 votes in Orleans Parish. In Baton Rouge, the president, East Baton Rouge Parish, won by 10,000 votes. But yet he lost the state by 344,000 votes. Kind of an amusing thing for some, and maybe an alarming thing for others, is that on Election Day, it was reported in Crawford, Texas, that President Bush inadvertently voted for President Obama, tried to correct his vote, and was told that he could not do so, and he did not like that, and reportedly there was a reporter right next door at the next voting booth who heard the whole thing, Susanna Everett, politics correspondent for the Waco Times, and she reported that President Bush accidentally voted for President Obama in the election of a week ago, and curious things happen in American politics, and that's one of them. This week, LSU is playing Ole Miss at Tiger Stadium. LSU is a 19-point favorite, And the Tigers are playing a team that used to be its biggest rival, the Ole Miss Rebels, who 50 years ago went 10-0, and according to some polls, publications, won the national title in 1962, and that was memorably the year in which Ole Miss was integrated by James Meredith. A riot broke out, two people died, but Ole Miss was playing football like few other schools in those days and won the national title with an undefeated team under Johnny Vaught. Last week, after President Obama won, there was a protest on the Ole Miss campus. 400 people showed up, and the school once again was immersed in a controversy about race. Now, Ole Miss does have a student body now that's 17% African American. That is more than LSU, which is about 10% African American. And the state of Mississippi last week voted about 45% for President Obama, showing that at some point, Mississippi, the state of Mississippi, the Magnolia State, might very well become fertile for Democratic candidates again. No Democrat has won Mississippi's electoral vote since Jimmy Carter in 1976. So we shall see. But some curious things are happening in American politics. And we're going to talk first with Jack Germond about this. And, of course, Jack Germond is a man who has followed the American political scene for many decades, and this is an interesting time. Jack, good morning to you.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. I have noted a few times, as have others, that in the last six presidential elections, Jack, that Democrats have won the popular vote five times, and in the six elections preceding those six, the Republicans won five times between 1968 and 1988. The only time Democrats won was a narrow victory by Jimmy Carter over Gerald Ford in 1976. So on a national perspective, what is going on in American politics? Is this a sea change, or is it something that is going to run in cycles like most other things do in politics?
Well, we have a change in the demographics. It is less involved with party than with the makeup of our population. We now have a large and growing Latino vote, heavily Democratic, 71% in this election. The African-American vote now, about 13 or 14% of the electorate, and that's split 93 to 7, I think, in Obama's favor. And out on the West Coast, quite a substantial, small but substantial Asian vote, or Asian American vote, I should say. And that is what's changed more than anything else. The other thing that's changed is that Republicans are forfeiting a lot of the women's vote. The differential for Obama was about 12 points. The most important thing, though, Jim, was interesting to me is the increased turnout among young voters, which nobody expected. And that is, they're more inclined to be Democratic.
What is curious that President Obama lost among men and yet won by more than 3 million votes nationally, and that women made up 53% of the electorate, two factors that you noted, Jack Germond.
Yeah.
And also, the president lost among white voters, 59 to 39%, and yet got more than 50% of the total vote. And in American politics, it is noted that only four presidents in the last century have received more than 50% of the votes in a presidential election twice, and those are Roosevelt, Reagan, Eisenhower, and Obama. So the president is in select company, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. The difference, you know, the fact of the matter is the Democrats have rarely carried a majority of the white vote. They did last with Carter, it was because he was a Southerner, but most elections, there's a slim majority for the Republicans and independents, but white voters, Democrat wins on minority groups.
Well, the Democrats have more minorities voting now. 87% of the electorate 20 years ago was white, and this time it was about 72%.
So, that's right. Makes a big difference.
So it makes a big difference, and that will likely change even more in the coming years. And as it changes, does that make more states potentially fertile for Democratic victory? States like Texas and Florida, which traditionally have gone to the Republicans, although Florida, as we now know, has gone twice in a row for President Obama.
Well, what happens there depends entirely, I think, on what the Republican Party does. The Republican Party has got to, for example, the Republican Party has to change its posture on immigration. They can't start talking about self-deportation and so forth. That's ridiculous. It's not going to happen, and most Americans don't think it'll be fair anyway. They also have to change their position on some of the other issues, in which they take a very hard line on social issues. Their wounds are sort of self-inflicted, to tell you the truth.
Well, there are some areas, including the state where you reside, Jack, that are now more Republican than they were Democratic. A Democrat won re-election to the U.S. Senate in West Virginia, but that state, in 1988, for example, was one of only 10 states to go for Michael Dukakis, and yet it is now solidly a Republican state.
So it is. That's true. The West Virginia is Democratic at all the local level. The statewide offices are all Democrats. Local officials are largely Democratic, but there's no question in presidential politics, the state has switched over. And in fact, we have this a Democratic senator, Joe Manchin, the former governor, who announced, for some reason, gratuitously announced in advance that he wasn't sure he was going to be able to vote for Obama, for the president of the party that he was representing. You know, it was sort of an unnecessary snap, but at Obama, and now he's in a position, he's got 4 years ahead where he's at a president, mm-hmm. We did not support. Not a good position to be.
Well, in the final tally of the electoral vote, we know that President Obama will get 332 votes if all the electors vote as they are obliged to do. And Mitt Romney will get 206. It was thought to be a much closer race than that, and that's what it's all about, is winning 270 electoral votes. In the popular vote, the president now has 62,613,000 votes compared to 59,140,000 for Governor Romney. So the president is now almost 3.5 million votes ahead of Governor Romney. In the popular vote, that's 50.6% to 47.8%.
You know, there's an interesting thing here. We all became convinced, largely by the television networks, that this was a very close campaign. And they were using the Gallup poll, which showed the tracking numbers on the overall popular vote. But it wasn't a close campaign. Obama was clearly ahead all the way. And everybody who looked at those polls carefully saw that his lead of these various high-voting constituency groups would put him through. What they didn't pay enough attention to was the polling data that showed that Mitt Romney was not well liked by the voters. They didn't feel comfortable with him, and that makes a big difference when you're trying to unseat an incumbent president. There's a risk involved, and you have to have somebody that you can feel comfortable with.
297-5633 is your number. We'll talk with Jack German some more. He predicted that President Obama would win the election, and most of us thought it would be a much tighter race than it turned out to be. But the president has won with well over 300 electoral votes and almost 63 million votes nationally. We'll talk more with Jack after this 1 minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works on the World Wide Web. Jack Drummond is with us for a bit more. Baton Rouge High, class of 1945. And Jack has written about race in politics and race in American life and race in this community through the years. And how much of a factor is race in American politics today? As I noted, the president lost among whites by 20 points, and yet he won the popular vote now by about 3 points. And he got over 3.5 million, or about 3.5 million more votes than his challenger. So what is going on?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that there's a, in the white male population over 50, and particularly in the South, but not exclusively in the South, there's a racial element of the voting. There's no question about it. And a lot of the voters admit it. And that is less common among young people, a lot less common. And that's why the young people are such an important asset for the Democrats right now and for Obama.
And as far as that changing anytime soon, do you sense, Jack, that in future elections, say in 2016, the Republican Party will likely get most of the white vote, and the Democratic Party will get a solid majority of the minority vote, and the coalition of votes between enough whites and an overwhelming number of minority groups will enable the Democrats to be almost unbeatable?
I wouldn't say they're almost unbeatable, but they could nominate the wrong candidate as the Republicans did. But you're not going to change this. Somebody was asking me the other day, what would change this? And I said, a cold snap would help. We need to die off a few people. It's going to take a while.
Well, older voters are voting for Republicans. At least a majority of them are.
Yeah, they are.
Not only do Republicans have the challenge of dealing with the changing demographics in America, but as you look at the numbers, the younger people, the younger you are, the more likely you are to vote, who have voted for Obama, and the older you are, the more likely you are to have voted for Romney. So
yeah,
that makes it, it would seem, even more daunting. It would seem.
The only thing that gives me pause, Jim, about this, the concern over the Republican Party, was that I remember 1964 when Barry Goldwater took this horrendous beating. And everybody, all the Republicans were wringing their hands and saying, oh, the party is dead, and we were all carrying on about how the Republicans would ever survive and so on. 4 years later, they elected a Republican president.
Yeah, not only that, it was a Republican president named Richard Nixon.
Yeah, of all people.
And then he won again in 72. Republicans won the White House in 1980, 1984, 1988. So you're right. After the loss by Goldwater in 64, many thought the Republican Party was on life support. And then the GOP turns around and wins 5 of the next 6 presidential elections. So
right.
You never know. But will the GOP, for example, will it have to move to the middle or perhaps to the left, whatever, but have to move away from the, quote, far right to be more palatable to the electorate as a whole?
Yeah, well, they can't be as extreme as they are. That's the problem. When you have people demanding a constitutional amendment to to overturn Roe v. Wade, forbid all abortions, and so forth. The American people aren't ready to do that, and it's and the Republican Party doesn't need to be identified with that, but they are, and they and it certainly doesn't help with young people.
297-5633 for Jack Drummond, HB in Denham Springs. Good morning, HB. You're on the air with Jack.
Good morning, Mr. Jermaine, Mr. Jim. Mr. Jermaine, I'm no spring chicken, and all of my life the elders have told me or had the saying is that politics make strange bedfellows, and only in the political arena can the most unqualified become the most qualified overnight and vice versa. Your opinion, please, sir.
Well, I don't know what makes a good president. I've seen a lot of presidents and covered a lot of the years, and I'm still not quite clear. I do know that a genuine interest in serious issues is important. But I think the main thing is a leader can project a sense of self-confidence, showing that he's comfortable in his own skin, to make the voters feel that he's safe. And that's less because of the position on a particular issue than it is their general approach, because you never know when you elect them what the issue is going to be. It's very difficult to figure out ahead of time.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Jack Germond. Chris on airline. Hi, Chris. You're on the air with Jack.
Hello. Good morning. I have a brother-in-law who's a physician here in town, has been one for 30-something years. And his hobby, unlike a lot of people, sort of boating or fishing or hunting or anything like that, his hobby is reading economics and finance books. And we joke with him all the time. He's got a library. Half of it's dental books and the other half is economic and finance type books. And I remember him telling me about 20 years ago, he said, there's going to be a day in this country when the takers outnumber the makers. And he's talking about economically, needless to say. That happened just this election. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts when the takers outnumber the makers by 20 million?
Well, okay.
Million.
Well, first of all, before we get Jack's response, Chris, how do you define a taker and a maker?
A person that a taker is a person that doesn't add to the society, but takes from it. A maker is the people that go out to work every day and pay taxes, and usually don't do anything to get those tax dollars back.
Well, most people in this country pay taxes of some kind.
Federal taxes?
They pay state.
And most people, if you want to look at a distortion in our system, is a distortion that creates this huge number of wealthy people who have who get tax breaks. I mean, Lord, we're worrying about the taxes of people over 250,000. As if this was a real hardship to raise their taxes 5%. Baloney. I don't think that's a hardship at all. And those, I understand the point you're making on the takers versus the makers is sort of the one that Mitt Romney was making when he was talking about the 47%. But the American people don't believe that. And there are a lot of people talk about it, but they don't believe it.
You disagree, though, Chris.
Yeah, well, when does it stop?
And well, you're also assuming that people on some kind of government support, any kind, which would include people who have government jobs, people who are veterans, they're part of the government as well, and all of our elected officials.
In Afghanistan too.
I'm sorry, Jack.
Would also include the soldiers in Afghanistan.
Right. That all of those are Democrats. I think many of them are people who probably voted for Governor Romney last week.
Certainly not. I'm not saying that at all. I just asked the question, when does it stop? And the second question is, can it stop? I think it's the snowball effect now. I think it will continue to grow and grow and grow.
All right. That is a point of view that is not exclusive to Chris, Jack.
No, it isn't. I know that. I understand that. And as I don't have an answer. I don't know when this. I don't know what could satisfy people who hold that view. They're entitled to their view, but an awful lot of people who work very hard and pay their taxes, and who don't complain about where they're going.
Well, a couple of examples in Louisiana, and I'm not disparaging either man because they both have admirable qualities and have served our state with distinction in most cases. But U.S. Senator David Vitter and Governor Bobby Jindal are two people who often criticize government, and yet both of them, Vitter at the age of 51 and Governor Jindal at the age of 41, Vitter's 52 now, I'm told. No, he's 51. Anyway, whatever, he's in his early 50s. Both of them have spent almost their exclusive professional life working for the government. They have spent very little time working in the private sector, where most of us toil, and yet they rail against the very government that has made them rich. Jack, that's not exclusive to Senator Vitter and Governor Jindal either.
No, it isn't. Nobody said things have to be logical, Jim.
Well, this is a time in American politics in which the battle lines are drawn, and we often talk about division. And we've had campaigns for president that have been more brutal than this last one. But the division that has resulted in essentially a shutdown in government at times, is that going to change with this election?
Well, I don't think we're going to go over the fiscal cliff. I think good sense is going to prevail here. The voters won't stand for that, and I think that, the Republicans who were being so adamant about what they would accept may bend a little bit, as will Obama.
Well, just to show how the news cycle constantly changes, here the president won re-election a week ago. And he did so in a convincing manner, more convincing than most thought. And there were those on election day, like Dick Morris, who were calling for a Romney landslide. And even Romney apparently thought he was going to win handily. All that has been big news for a few days. And now the story that is dominating more so than the presidential victory is the story about David Petraeus. What do you make of this one?
I'm made heartsick by it. I think it's... First of all, as long as there was no national security implication, and there apparently was not, I think we're going far overboard on this coverage of this story. And I just find it, I'm sorry Petraeus was bad, it was a mistake on Petraeus' part, but he made a mistake. But the world is not coming to an end. All these people in Congress who got their noses out of joint because they weren't consulted, they always do that. And when they're consulted, what do? They hold a hearing. I mean, they don't do anything.
Here's an unsigned email, Jack, saying, going back to the election, I find it amusing that you point out that the white bias vote is racist, but then give a pass to the minorities as if that wasn't a race choice. I guess he's referring to remarks made by you and me. Is it different when 95% of the African Americans vote for Democrats, and let's say, as it happened in Louisiana when David Duke was running, that 60% of the whites vote for David Duke? Is there a difference in that choice?
I don't know. I think. Pardon me. I think there is. Some racism on both sides, but there are good historical reasons for the blacks being, black voters being aligned with Democratic politicians, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's their well, blacks have to be concerned about who is on the Supreme Court, for example, as we already discovered, and so that's I think that's. I think that's an argument, but it's not a solution.
Well, in this state, for example, David Duke once received 44% of the votes in a statewide race in 1990 when he ran against Bennett Johnston for the U.S. Senate. A black candidate has never gotten more than 40% until President Obama last week. He got 40.6% in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And in New Orleans, which has been a majority black city for at least half a century or close to it, people in New Orleans have voted for a succession of white people to represent them. They have a white mayor now. There have been white district attorneys, white people in Congress like Lindy Boggs and Hale Boggs before her. So black people are far more accustomed to voting for whites than whites are for blacks.
Yeah, that's true. I remember very distinctly the David Duke campaign for governor when the slogan for Edward Evans was "Vote for the Crook."
It's important. That was what the bumper sticker said.
Yeah, I was down there in New Orleans on election day, and I was going to go out to the racetrack actually, but particularly afternoon. But I drove through some black wards, and it was incredible the turnout. The black people scared to death that David Duke would be elected, and Louisiana was. Starting to congratulate itself when he was defeated, until we found out that, as you just pointed out, he still carried a majority of the white vote.
He did.
Duke.
Bill Kelly writes, so what role does Fox News have on influencing the older and uneducated demographic? That's Bill's.
Well, they have a tight hold on an element of the electorate. There's no question about that. People who Roger Ailes, who was running that operation, was a very shrewd guy, and that's positioning themselves as the alternative to all the communist sympathizers on the other side, so-called, has been very smart. Fox News, they don't have a majority of the viewing public, but they have a substantial element of it, and it's very tight hold in many cases.
Here's a question from Elena. She asks if this victory last week by President Obama was a victory for public broadcasting funding.
Well, it's I don't think that was high on the list, but I do think public broadcasting has a better chance of getting decent funding now than it would have if the Republicans had been elected.
Yeah, I think if it had been a Republican Senate and House and a Republican president, the $445 million for public broadcasting would have gone by the wayside, no doubt. But in fact, our congressman here in Baton Rouge, who got almost 80% of the votes, Bill Cassidy, who's running for the U.S. Senate in 2 years, he says, let's do away with funding for public broadcasting. Jack, you were on the McLaughlin Group for many years. I don't imagine you got rich doing that program.
Not really, but I did send my daughter to college.
that is interesting. The McLaughlin Group was as much Jack as it was John McLaughlin, but we've talked about this before as we head to the break. I think you quit because you love public broadcasting. You just didn't like McLaughlin too much.
I couldn't get along with him, no. More unpleasant off the air than he was on the air, which is pretty difficult for people to imagine, but it was true.
297-5633. We'll return with Jack Germond after this one-minute pause on WRKM. WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633, if you're calling locally, 877-217-5757 outside the area, and Inkster Show at WRKF.org. A listener, Jack Germond, points out that John McLaughlin and others predicted in the final days of the campaign that Governor Romney would win the election. McLaughlin apparently did so on the last edition of the McLaughlin Group before the election. How could they have been so wrong?
Well, they weren't doing any reporting. They weren't, they were just looking at poll numbers, and that's not good enough. They they weren't looking at the inside of the polls. You know, those are the figures showing how women were splitting, for example, or the large turnout of young people, which surprised everyone. But I thought Obama had it all along. But I must say I was surprised by the young people turnout. It was incredible and very encouraging.
Well, the president now has received more votes in the last two elections than any person in U.S. history. And, of course, the next president will receive more votes than this president. That's the way it works as long as we have population growth in the in the U.S. But it would seem that based on the electoral map, independent of the popular vote, that with California's 55 electoral votes, and then you've got New York, which is reliably Democratic, and Illinois, reliably Democratic, Pennsylvania, Ohio now has started to be fertile for Democrats in presidential elections, as has Florida. The electoral map works for Democrats right now. It would seem that the Republicans, who benefited from the Electoral College in 2000, may very well now be inclined to lead the charge to change the way we elect presidents.
That's not going to happen. That's every 4 years we have a spasm of talking about that, Jim, but and then it fades away. It's not going to happen. And they, it would never get through the Senate, for one thing. Too many small states want to protect their place in the game, and I can't say that I blame them. That's one of those. It's one of those things people like to talk about, but it doesn't mean anything.
Well, another question about Petraeus from a listener. Marcia, she asks about the publicity that has surrounded the woman that General Petraeus is alleged to have had the affair with, and I see today in the New York Times photos of FBI agents at the woman's house. Is it fair to the lady who is married and according to reports, had a relationship with Mr. Petraeus? Is it fair for her to be foisted into the public spotlight like this?
I don't know. The probably not, but she was full grown. She knew what she was doing, and it was a dangerous, you know, it was a dangerous game she played. And I feel sympathy for both of them. Because the whole thing is an ugly mess, but it isn't a federal crime, so perhaps it will go away and we'll find something else to worry about.
Well, when you were covering President Kennedy, did you know that he was having extramarital liaisons?
No, I didn't. And a lot of people claim that they know it after the fact, but I didn't, and I think. And neither did most of the people covering the White House then. You hate to admit it, but we didn't know it. Some people did, I think, but I wasn't one of them.
But they didn't report it.
Yeah, they didn't report it.
Today,
well, the rule was, you know, you never, private life was not a fair game except when the conduct of an official affected his official performance, I should say. And I guess they figured in that case that wasn't true. But we never, we were very circumspect with a lot of people who were having affairs and who were having personal problems of one kind or another. Yeah.
Well, you know, Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, and Gary Hart had his campaign blow up on him in 1987. It was actually a year before the election. So that was 24 years. And now 25 years have passed since 87 in the present. So the Hart affair with Donna Rice and the Kennedy assassination were closer in time than the Hart affair in the present. What happened between 1963 and 1987 in American journalism to cause media types nationally and locally to get all excited about unearthing some kind of salacious information about public officials?
I don't know. You know, A lot of things changed then, you know, in that period.
Watergate in particular.
A lot of the literature changed. A lot of the movies changed. You know, we were discussing a lot of things publicly that we had not been discussing before. And that was true. In Gary Hart's case, it was sort of a outlandish thing that he was.
He was daring reporters to follow him, and they did.
Yeah, well, that's all it took.
Told him that they would be very bored if they followed him. And he may have been right. It's just that he wasn't bored.
Yeah, amen. Oh, well.
But it did cost him any chance he had at the 1988 nomination for president.
That's right, yeah.
And if he had been nominated, I would assume he would have done better than Michael Dukakis did against the first George Bush.
Yeah, I would think so, too, but who knows, you know.
You were not a fan of the first President Bush, were you?
No, I wasn't. I thought he was vacuous, and he's a nice man. Everybody tells me that. I'm sure he was a nice man, but he is a nice man. But he had nothing he wanted to do as president except hold the office, have it on his resume, and he didn't have any concern about. The wrongs need to be righted in our society at all times, and what a president can do. It seems to me like he was empty. I once made the mistake of being quoted in the Wall Street Journal as saying, "With George H.W. Bush, you hold him up to the light, he doesn't throw a shadow."
Hmm.
And that put me on Barbara Bush's bad list for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think that might do it now.
That would do it.
You and Jules Whitcover wrote a book about the 92 election. I think it was called Mad as Hell. And it involved the election in which Clinton beat Bush and Perot in 1992. Now, why were people mad as hell in 1992 and they gave an incumbent president only 37% of the votes? 37%. Fewest number for an incumbent since 1912.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet, some thought the electorate was mad as hell a week ago, and they gave this president almost 51% of the votes. How did it happen?
Well, it was also a question of what kind of alternative they were offered. That's a big difference. I mean, yeah. And either, you know, in the other election, George H.W. Bush was clearly damaged badly by the third party candidate being there. But Clinton was a strong candidate. And he knew how to do things.
Well, Bush,
happily he did some of the wrong things. Who knows?
Bush finished 7% behind Clinton in that election, meaning that he would have needed about 70% of the Perot vote to win. And for those who think that Ross Perot cost George Bush that election, I think they are mistaken. If Bush couldn't make the case with 70% of the, of the 19% who voted for Perot, he would be unlikely to get 70% of them if Perot had not been running. But
I think that's true. We'll never know.
Thomas and Holden. Good morning, Thomas. You're on with Jack Tremon.
Good morning, Jim.
I think it's Thomas and Walden.
We've been listening to the Democrat celebration hour this morning, and I just wondered, though, if Mr. Jamon had a comment about the misinformation, lack of information, and equivocation in relation to Benghazi affair that we seem to have not been able to find much of what was going on. I'll take your comment off air. Thanks a lot.
What about Benghazi?
I don't know anything about Benghazi that everybody doesn't know. I mean, what I know is what's in the papers, as they say. I'm not covering that, and I don't have any insight into it. I think the people in Congress are making too much of a thing about the failures of the security system. It happened. And they were trying to blame Obama for this in the White House. The President of the United States cannot worry about the security forces at every consulate around the world. It just isn't, it isn't feasible. And I think the story is way out of, been played way out of proportion. It was a terrible tragedy, but that's a very bad part of the world.
Well, the president, deserves and has received blame for being the person at the top as this occurred. And there were failures, obviously, that the U.S. government was involved with. And the president, as Harry Truman said, the buck stops with him. But what about when Ronald Reagan was president and more than 200 American servicemen were killed in their barracks as they slept in Beirut in 1983?
That's right. And, so what did he do?
He invaded Grenada.
He changed the subject by invading Grenada.
And we got a big win in Grenada.
He changed the subject.
Well, the president changed the subject by winning the election, and Governor Romney had a chance to make a case that this should have been something that the electorate should be consumed with or concerned about on election day. But some are saying the Governor Romney missed an opportunity there, Jack.
I don't think so. I think what was wrong with Romney is people didn't like him very well.
Yeah, he was not liked particularly well. I don't think so, but the polls had indicated, and let's make it clear that the polls were mostly accurate, that Romney's likability index had increased after the debates, but nonetheless, it wasn't enough to overcome the president. And
you always have to remember, but when you have an incumbent president running, challenger is a seen to some degree as a risk, and he has to be a risk worth taking. And he didn't turn out to be.
He didn't make the case. Well, thank you, Jack. It's always a pleasure, and I hope you're enjoying.
I enjoyed talking to you as usual.
My pleasure, our pleasure. Take care, Jack Tremont. We're joined in studio now, and I must say that it's unlikely we're going to make contact with Eric Deggans, the commentator for NPR, who's written a compelling book called Race Baiter, and we will endeavor to talk to Mr. Deggans sometime soon. But in studio for a few moments as we round out the hour, and I talked at the open about LSU being a 19-point favorite over Ole Miss this week, is Cody Worsham, the editor of Tiger Rag magazine. And a few weeks ago, there was a story that emanated in Sports Illustrated. It was a cover story in Sports Illustrated about LSU players possibly being scrutinized by the NCAA because of their activities off the field, possibly endorsing products, which is a no-no. And now Cody Worsham, the editor of Tiger Rag, has unearthed a new nugget in this story. And good morning to you, Cody.
Hi, Jim.
Well, and this one involves a player who has not been mentioned before, Spencer Ware. What's going on with Spencer?
Well, through digging through some of the promotional tools that the Palace used and to promote the party mentioned in Sports Illustrated, and I'll backtrack a little bit and say that there was a March 10th, 2012 party in honor of Tyrann Mathieu at the Palace, which is a local restaurant, as the owner likes to call it, but it serves as a bar on the weekends for college kids, and there was a party for Tyrann Mathieu, and the posters and Facebook events indicated that it was hosted by LSU football player Anthony Johnson and former LSU football player Morris Claiborne. And there were some promotional videos for this party, which Spencer Ware and Anthony Johnson both appeared in, and then Anthony Johnson also lended some of his social media cred to spread the story around. So that could be a possible violation of NCAA bylaw 12.5.2.1, which prohibits players from sponsoring any or promoting or using their name or likeness for any commercial good or service. And the interesting thing here is that not only were they promoting the party itself was promoting a mixtape released by several of Tyrann Mathieu's friends and possibly Tyrann himself. So there's a little bit of a dual action there.
So where does Spencer Ware come in?
Well, Spencer Ware appeared in the video, a promotional video. There's a promoter with the Palace named Xavier Williams, who is very active on social media, and he included Spencer Ware and Anthony Johnson in a promotional video. The two players appear. Anthony Johnson mentions that there's a party for ERA Nation, which is the name of Tyrann Mathieu's group. And then
that's ERA Nation, right?
ERA Nation.
That's not the Equal Rights Amendment.
That's not the Equal Rights Amendment, I don't believe. I think it has a different meaning. But Johnson and Ware both appear in the video. Ware doesn't verbally endorse anything, but he does rap a couple of pretty poor lyrics, and his name and his face is also not his name. His face appears with the Palace logo, and LSU NFL party text pops up. So,
well, in the new age of social media, this is bound to happen somewhere, and it just has happened at LSU. But in the overall scheme, is this really that big of a deal? Is this something the NCAA will scrutinize with interest?
I'm not sure, because the NCAA is so bipolar sometimes with the way that they handle these cases. What the NCAA needs to do is they need to clarify, and they need to, especially with the new age of social media, they need to be clear and specific with their policies and say, you know, is it okay for a player to tweet, I just had McDonald's, this burger was delicious, but is it not okay for a player to, right, to put his name on a party?
And this place, the Palace, are players still hanging out there?
Yeah, they are. As recently as this past weekend for homecoming, there was a big party there, and Xavier Williams, the promoter, tweeted, LSU football is all up in the place, or, you know, whatever. He indicated they were all there.
The place
party.
Or the Palace?
The Palace.
The Palace.
The Palace.
And this is on Scenic Highway?
On Scenic Highway in North Baton Rouge.
Okay, so the LSU players are apparently still circulating at the Palace, and they'll be at Death Valley Saturday, 2:30, as LSU hosts Ole Miss. Thank you, Cody.
Thank you.
The editor of Tiger Rag and TigerRag.com. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Richard Fisher, who produced today, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members. Thank you.